story. This is our class on Shabbat. And this is a true story that happened on a Friday afternoon. A multi-car collision took place in Israel. And it brought traffic to basically a grinding halt on Highway 1. Has anybody been on Highway 1 in Israel? Basically joins Israel and Tel Aviv. It's like the most popular highway. Anyway, no one was hurt, thank God, but it wasn't good for people's Shabbos plans. Closest community was Geva Binyamin. It was a half a mile away. And the towns of Psagot and Kochav Yaakov were also several kilometers down the road. So what did people do? What do you do if you're in your car? Shabbos is about to hit. This is unbelievable what happened. Dozens of Sabbath observant drivers pulled their cars onto the shoulder of the road. They grabbed whatever they could and they started to walk a half a mile to the closest town. And it was unbelievable as the first wave of travelers arrived in Geva Binyamin. The townspeople were just they were already in shul. You know, they're already like in synagogue, starting Shabbat. Shabbos didn't really start technically yet. They were still able to carry their things and all that. And once the residents understood the situation, they immediately mobilized and they got everybody places. And then the others went to another town and in Psagot and Kochav Yaakov. And within 1 hour, over 100 families were placed in homes on Shabbat. Whoa, wow. Not one person was left without a place to eat or sleep. I always think about that story when people call me for a place in Manhattan to sleep over for the weekend because they become Sabbath observant. They don't want to travel in. I'm like, I can't help you. You'll have to get a hotel for $8,000 a night. You know? No, I'm just kidding. But we do put people up all the time, but it's not something. My question is really what compels a whole family or a single Jew to just pull over their car and abandon it with all of their belongings because of this thing called the Sabbath? And what, you know, and people go to great lengths to observe this thing called Shabbat. So I want to just mention a few other things as well. There's some peculiarly, uniquely Jewish things about Shabbat that make it stand out from other mitzvot. Number one, okay, it's one of the Ten Commandments. Now, that doesn't mean that one of the Big Ten are more important than the other 603. That's for another conversation. But it's one of the Big Ten. Talmud also says that if every Jew would observe two Sabbaths, the Messiah would come. Talmud does not say that about other commandments. The Kabbalists teach that Shabbat is not for the sake of the weekdays are for the sake of Shabbat. And that we kind of think about it as like, I need just a break. It's just a really good idea as a break so I can get on with my life. No, Shabbos is our life. And lastly, more people have found their way back to Judaism through Shabbat than any other mitzvah. I bet you if you put 100 Balei Tshuva, Jews who've come back to Judaism in one room, and you ask for a show of hands, and you give them 10 mitzvah, kosher, Shabbat, that like what was it that spurred and inspired your spiritual return? Yeah.
So why is it that most things like Chabad and stuff like that call Shabbat a day of rest, whereas Kabbalists call it a day of intense spiritual work instead of a day of rest?
Because it's a little of both, but it's a different definition of rest. Mm. When the Kabbalists talk about rest, they don't mean like the kind of rest that you and I think about in Western, you know, the Western notion of like not doing. Like the more you're not doing, the more you're chilling, the more you're the more restful it is. You know, you're like sipping a tequila on the beach, that's like rest. Rest in the Jewish sense, Kabbalists teach, is that there's a certain spiritual certain tension between the physical and spiritual worlds. And somehow that tension is put to rest on Shabbat. That's why Shabbat is called Shabbat. What does the word Shabbat actually mean?
Rest.
Right, but that's like the bad English translation. That's why you come to this class, to get the real word. Shabbat is from the word Shevet, which means to sit. Lashevet. Vakasha, Lashevet. Please have a seat. What is sitting? The physical and the spiritual are finally sitting with each other. They're not fighting anymore. That's why on Shabbos, it's not a pure spiritual day. We eat foods. We sing songs. We take walks. We do all these physical things on Shabbat. We just do them in a way that sort of unites the physical and the spiritual. That's really what we mean by rest. And I'm going to come back to that in a few minutes. Because we also don't refer to work. And Nava will know this because we're learning this with the fellows. But work is also not the real way we think about work. Like, I could schlep 15 chairs, set up a table, and host a lunch for 3 hours. And I will tell you, it's not a restful experience. It's enjoyable. I love doing it. I do it every Shabbat. But it's not restful. I mean, I go over to that light switch and I flick on the lights. That doesn't involve any work. That's pretty easy. It's a flick of a wrist. And yet I've worked. So we got to dispel with these definitions because they're not helpful. Okay, we know that rest and work on Shabbat is ceasing from creative activities. Okay, we're basically turning the world back over to God. I'm going to come back to that soon. Okay, so the question is, what is it about Shabbat that's so fundamental to being Jewish and so important to have in our lives? So we just dove into it already. The word Shabbat, Shevet, and we're going to be having some classes about Passover, and I'm going to come back to this idea. I think next couple of weeks, we're going to be speaking about Passover. We're going to do a mock Seder, get you guys ready for the holiday. And one of the things we're trying to do on Shabbat is, what are we trying to accomplish on Shabbat? What does the Torah say? Because God created the world in 6 days and rested, and so should you. Okay, why? We're supposed to bear testimony that God is what? That God is the creator of the world. How do we do that, by the way? How do we bear testimony? Does anybody know what ritual we actually use to accomplish that? Every Friday night, the reason we stand, when we recite the
Kiddush.
Very good. The Kiddush. That's the reason, by the way, you're supposed to stand. Some people sit when they make the second and third blessing, but everyone stands for the first paragraph. But that's a paragraph taken from the Torah, that God created in 6 days and rested on the seventh. And when a Jew gives testimony in a Jewish court of law, you're supposed to stand. How are you giving testimony? Yom HaShishi, V'alchul HaShemayim V'aretz V'chol Tzvam. It's the sixth day. You're standing up and you're saying, I am bearing testimony that there is a God, and that God created the world, and now we're all resting. We're going to follow His lead by resting on the seventh day. And that is something that we take very, very seriously. Why? Why? Why does God need to do that? Well, we don't remember who God was, who God is.
Constant reminder, the same way we have mezuzah or tefillin.
Mezuzah is a constant reminder. We forget things very quickly. Why don't we pray the same things every day, like 3 times a day?
Yes. Get it ingrained.
Repetition.
The repetition is important for what?
Memorizing.
Why?
So it becomes natural, like
right? And what is it? Are we so prone to forgetting?
Distracted, maybe.
We're distracted. You know, you're kind of like, yeah. You ever hear of mission creep? You know, mission creep is like your company is supposed to be building widgets, okay? And somebody calls up the company and says, "Hey, you know, can you guys make this? The manufacturing process involving widgets also." So all of a sudden, and then like a year later, all of a sudden you don't even make widgets anymore. We came here to make widgets. What are we doing? That happens at MG all the time. People go, MG should start doing all this. I'm like, we're a Jewish outreach organization. We're supposed to engage Jewish people in Jewish life. How does this fit in? It doesn't really, but you guys are really good at it. Stick to the plan. What's the bit? Why are we here? We're supposed to reflect God in the world. The Jewish people are supposed to be that one nation devoted to bringing God into the world, and in a world that's increasingly forgetful of God. Now, why am I saying that? Because we live in an age of great technology. And the more technology and the more advanced, the more we can do on our own, the less we feel a need for God. And we also want to express the idea that God didn't just create the world and put it on an automatic timer. That God maintains, and that's one of the ideas we'll talk about next week with Passover, that God maintains His intervention in the world, which is why the second reason the Torah gives for keeping Shabbos, creation is one. Second reason, anybody know to remember what event in human history, in Jewish history?
The giving of the Torah.
Not the giving of the Torah, it's a good guess.
No, the getting out of Egypt.
Getting out of Egypt. Why? How does getting out of Egypt further develop our belief? And our mission.
We were slaves,
and then God came to our aid, demonstrating that God's not only a God of what? He's not only the God that created the world, but He's also a God that
empathizes
and
works with
kindness,
compassionate,
stays what?
involved.
Stays involved in the world. There are a lot of people who believe in God. Albert Einstein believed in God, of creation. He did not believe in a personal God. Judaism subscribes to a belief in a God of creation, but also that that same God continues to intervene in the world. This is a very important tradition in Kabbalah. Because the Kabbalah teaches that the moment God turns his attention away from the world and stops pumping his spiritual energy into the world is the moment the world reverts back to its original primordial chaos. It's called in Hebrew Tohu Vavohu, which is also the name of the first band I ever played. It's a great name for a band. Yeah. Chaos and Disorder. I was in high school. I played in this band. And we don't believe that Hashem, like the watchmaker, you know, he creates a watch, and then that's it. He sells it to the distributor sells it to a retail store, the retail store sells it to a customer, and whoever created the watch has no relationship with that watch anymore. That's not our belief in God. I'm not telling you what to believe, but that's the classic Jewish idea. So there's two reasons given in the Torah for keeping Shabbos. One, creation; two, history. And that's where the Exodus comes in. We're going to speak more about that next week. But the question is, who's running the show? The idea that God's involvement is ongoing is a fundamental idea. And that's why we cease from what kind of work on Shabbos. We cease from creative work, not simply work. It's not just don't go to work or don't do things that involve the physical exertion of labor, because I physically exert myself. Shabbos for me is very laborious. It just is. I'm schlepping chairs around, I'm serving food to people, but I'm not doing any work if I don't do what? If I don't do something that's actually changing something from its natural state. If you look at the 39 activities that go into the definition, the classic Torah definition of work, which the Torah doesn't give, by the way, the Torah just says don't do work. That's why you need the oral tradition to fill in the blanks. It's basically taking an object and somehow affecting a change in it to create something different. So what's an example of work on Shabbat?
Making a fire.
Creating a fire, very good.
Drawing.
Drawing. Writing. Erasing. You know, something that affects a real change. That's why if the change is not permanent, it might be permissible on Shabbat. Like, you're not supposed to write on Shabbat. But let's say, when I was a kid, I used to see the fog on the car, you know. There's a lot of that today, you know. So why don't you make a little smiley face or write my name, Mark. Can I do that? Is that writing? It's not permanent, though. I'm not supposed to tie a knot on Shabbat, something I can't tie my shoes.
It technically is permanent, because then the next time that the window fogs, you're still going to see that design.
So this is, by the way, this is the exact same kind of conversation the sages got into. Or contemporary rabbis get into, because it's not permanent. And then also, like, there's some people when they tie their ties, they won't tie a Windsor knot. It's a very serious tie knot. The Windsor.
Impossible.
It's like a double. Yeah.
But what about just have, you know, when you so take regular, it out, next time you leave it ready to go.
Yeah, you can do that because it's done. Okay. I've seen some people do that. But I tie a regular, I don't tie a Windsor, I tie a regular, or my shoelaces, I just tie a bow tie. But you're not supposed to tie like a double knot, anything that takes on permanence.
Okay.
No, affecting some kind of permanent change. It can't be like a quick kind of change. And this is the idea.
Or like tearing like a piece of paper or something like that.
Yeah, tearing. Now, if you're doing something for pure destructive purposes, it's technically okay. But it'd be interesting if you're going to destroy.
That's why there's Shabbos toilet paper, because you're not supposed to cut toilet paper on Shabbat.
Because you're cutting it for a practical purpose.
Oh.
If you're destroying something for the sake of destruction, let's say I want to. Our brothers and sisters are in Gaza right now, and they're leveling lots of buildings filled with terrorists and arms. So they need to blow up. Okay, they can do any of this on Shabbos because it's life threatening. Let's say somebody wanted to be careful. Can you blow up a building? It'd be an interesting thing on the news, you know? A bunch of, like, halachic Jews sitting in Gaza wondering if they can blow up a building. No, for a life-threatening situation, but otherwise, let's just put that aside. I'm just trying to make a point.
Probably not.
No.
So if it's, you can blow it up if you're doing it for the sake of destruction. But let's say if you're destroying something, let's say, to clear something away so you can build something else. Mm. Or you're digging, not just to level a building, but to create a foundation for a future building. That's where it would matter. The definition of malacha, of not doing work on Shabbat, it has to be constructive, it has to be deliberate and intentional, of affecting some kind of change. There's only one of the 39 acts of work that does not pertain to this, and we discussed this last week.
Yeah.
What is it? Carrying. You're not supposed to carry in a public domain on Shabbat. Now, that doesn't really seem to partake of the definition we just developed. Because I could, if it's on here, it's okay, but if I take my watch off and I put it in my pocket, I don't even remember it's in there. And I walk from my house outside, and there's no what's called an Erev outside. I've just broken the Shabbos. But I've effected no change in this watch or in my life. So what does it matter? So carrying, we actually talked about this last week, carrying is the way we basically go about our social lives. We transfer goods, and that's why it's only carrying, welcome, it's only carrying in the public thoroughfare that's prohibited. You can carry in your home.
So the market used to be like a marketplace.
The marketplace. Right? It still is. Something.
Right, yeah. But it's not.
No, it's not about leading. It's a good, I'm glad it's not about that it could lead to something. It's the actual transfer of items from one person to the next. We're disengaging on Shabbat from manipulating the physical world. That's the first 38 of the 39, of not affecting change, and not affecting any change in the course of our interpersonal dealings with one another. Why are we doing this or not doing this? Because we want to shine a spotlight back onto God. We want to remind the world and ourselves, we have to start with ourselves, that although we've gotten really good at manipulating the world, building hospitals and creating cures, and getting really technologically sophisticated, we still want to maintain our humility and remember that there's still a greater creator. We are still a creation. How does the creation be reminded that he or she is a creation and not only a creator? And that's why I think keeping Shabbos in this technical age, this explosion of technology that we're seeing, like so rapid, which is amazing. For the greatest part, it's brought humankind good. Okay, we'll see what happens with AI. Okay, once a week we pull back, not simply because we're tired and we want to rest. It's because we are a special people that's supposed to be shining the spotlight on God. Now, you can walk around and preach that, but imagine if you have an entire people, like a couple of million Jews, and everybody sees them disengaging from these changing things once a week. That makes a much bigger impact than preaching it all the preaching in the world. Nobody wants to be told what to do anyway. But if you walk the walk, it's a much, much bigger, better
Jew
thing.
To Jew is to do, you know?
To Jew is to do.
Did you say that or did
no, that was...
the guy last week?
That was... That's a Tuvia-ism.
Yeah.
But if you're not, like, selling the watch or anything, you just forgot that it's in your pocket, I don't see how that's breaking the Shabbos if you, like, actually forgot that it's just in your pocket.
It's in your pocket, but you're still transferring it. So it's a good point. Like, it seems like if you're not intending to do it and you just accidentally left it in your pocket. So first of all, doing things by accident is not the same as doing them on purpose. It doesn't have the same seriousness, but it's still prohibited. But you're still engaged in that activity. You're still involved in the activity of transferring something from one place to the next. Now, I want to share a story which had a big impact on me when I first heard it. I went to a panel years ago on Shabbat, like the topic of Shabbat, and it was a very bizarre group of people. It was not on Shabbat. It was with Shmuley Boteach. It was with Marion Williamson, and Rabbi Joseph Blau was one of my rabbis from Yeshiva University. And Marion Williamson, you know her? She ran for president for like 10 minutes. And
she's
what's that? She's an author. She was like a radio talk show host. She's great. Big fan. So she told this story how she was once sitting in her home doing like answering some emails on her computer, on her laptop. Not her laptop, on her, you'll see why this is relevant. It was like a plugged-in computer. And her 8-year-old daughter was playing on her plugged-in computer, like a video game. And she was also watching a movie and listening to some music, because that's what 8-year-olds do today. Yeah, the three things at the same time.
Yeah.
Anyway, the mother and the daughter are the same. She's telling the story. And as she's telling the story, like, they're just minding their own business, doing their own thing, and then, bam, all the lights go out. There's a blackout in Detroit where they live. And the little girl gets, like, nervous. She's never been in a blackout before. So what are you doing? There's a blackout. There's, like, she finds a candle. She runs around, looks for a candle and a match, and lights the candle. And there's nothing else they can do, so they just start talking to each other. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And then, boom, everything goes back on, and the little girl gets back on her computer, and the mom gets back on hers. 5 minutes later, the daughter asks her mom, she says, "Mommy, do you think we'll ever get that chance again?" And the mother was like, "What do you mean, chance? Chance for what?" She's like, "Do you think we'll be able to ever to do that again? That was so much fun. And we never do that." And it hit the mother. Because basically they had like 20 minutes of Shabbos, if you think about it. You know, it's like a forced blackout, Shabbos. And I'm really convinced that, and I'm not an all-or-nothing rabbi. I'm not one of those rabbis that believe like you have to either keep everything or do nothing. Judaism is a spectrum. But if most of us are not that disciplined, that we could really just disengage on our own and just do it according to the way we want, and it'll truly be meaningful. Judaism prescribes, I would say, like this weekly forced blackout that, in a sense, compels us to spend quality time with each other because there's nothing else to do. There's not a lot to do on Shabbos. I mean, yeah, you could sing songs, you could have meals, and you know, if you're a rabbi, you're really busy on Shabbos, you're running your congregation, but it's just that there's forced downtime. And it's very different than Sunday downtime. You know, like when you can get in the car and go to the mall and meet up with some friends and do this and do that. It's just different. I don't even know how to describe it and explain it. My mother of blessed memory, she's like, "I never understood how people can keep sane without observing Shabbat." You know, and I remember in my home growing up, Fridays were—it was a crazy place. I did not like being in my home on Fridays. It was just like a little stressful because we had a lot of Shabbos guests and we were cooking. A lot of stuff was going on. But then, like the minute Shabbat started, my mother would light the candles, like to bring in Shabbat, and then this sort of like serenity just like took over her and the whole household. It just like was a complete transformation, and it's a really important time. You know, we've got these companies that have these unplugged weekend retreats, or they, you can pay hundreds of dollars and go on one of these things where you put your phone in a black box and everyone thinks these people are so brilliant, you know. And people understand that technology, while it's an indispensable tool for virtually everything we do today, it's also keeping us from deepening our relationships and from finding a lot of meaning and happiness. Mm-hmm. I remember also, I'll just tell you another quick story, when my daughter, who's now 19, was probably 15. So I saw like a marked difference in her and my other son, Yehuda, because they grew up when kids started getting smartphones. Mm-hmm. And my two older boys, they all have smartphones, but they didn't grow up with it. And there was a big difference. Mm. Same parents, obviously different personalities, every kid is different. But I remember when my daughter came home, and she was glued to the phone, always, and in high school. And I remember she brought home four of her friends for Shabbat. And they, you know, these are nice Jewish kids from Jewishly observant homes going to a Jewish school. And we're going around the table, and like, "What's your favorite mitzvah?" I don't know, just came up with a... So one of them said Shabbos. I said, "Great, what is it about Shabbos that you love?" And one of my daughter's friends said, "Can't use a phone on Shabbos." I love that. I said, "You love?" I thought it was so hard. And then I turned to my daughter. I said, "I thought it was so hard for you not to use the phone. You're like, counting the hours." She goes, "No, it's so good." so good. There's so much less anxiety that we all feel, especially high school kids. Mm. By not checking what other people are doing and saying, you know, living this comparison kind of life that we often are forced to do because
it's
we're
social
just...
media.
It is. So it's like, I mean, it's become very... A lot of things have become harder to sell in Judaism. I've been doing this for like a long time. But Shabbos has gotten easier and easier for me to sell. It's like such an easy sell now, you know? And I used to be very queasy about like telling people, you know, don't use electricity on Shabbat, don't use your phones on Shabbat, because that's like a very orthodox kind of thing to say to people. I'm like, I tell people all the time, it's the best thing in the world. If you could do that a little during the week, you'd be good. You'd be doing better too. And it's not just for Jewish people. I mean, everybody needs this. It's just... You know, and I suffer from this. You know, it's these digital detoxing weekends, which, by the way, became very popular here in the United States and found their way to Europe and Australia. And why do you think mindfulness is such a craze today? Mindfulness is not a new thing. And Buddhism, which was basically, you know, popularized by lots of Jews... Zen Buddhism specifically, that's the part of Buddhism that became very popular in the United States. Why do you think it's become more yoga and all this? Why is it a coincidence that it somehow coincided with the explosion of the smartphone and TikTok and everything else? They go hand in hand because we're desperate for a break.
Need some balance, something offsetting it.
Yeah.
Also, the mental health has
progressively worse in this country. You know, I've said this, I wrote this in my first book, that we are the most prosperous, affluent country in the world, and we consume more than 75% of the world's antidepressants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the only reason that the average life expectancy has not risen significantly. Okay, my father just passed away a few months ago, as you know, some of you know. He was 90. That's not so rare. When his father died and he was 85, everybody said, wow, it's amazing he lived till he was 85. A few people said, wow, it was amazing your dad lived till 90. But very few people said that. So many more people said that when I was 17 and my Zadie passed away and he was 85. Because in that 30-year gap, whatever... The life expectancy has been, it's unbelievable. People are living much. So how come the numbers have not gone up? You know why? Because suicide went up. Mm-hmm. Suicide with young people has gone up so much. So that pulled the numbers down dramatically. So it's a serious state of affairs, you know, and I'm not saying you start keeping Shabbos and all your psychological and emotional problems will disappear.
More alone time with yourself.
What's that?
Just be alone with yourself more then.
We have to learn how to be better with ourselves. And, you know, and I suffer from this. I like to speak about things that I struggle with personally. But if I didn't have to keep Shabbos, and I don't have to, but I feel... You know, I'm committed to Jewish tradition. So Jewish tradition says, don't turn off the phone, don't use the thing, don't do this. And here are the rules and laws. If I didn't have that, I'd be a total mess. I'm somewhat of a mess already because it's the other 6 days and I go right on it. The second Shabbos is out. I'm on it till Shabbos starts. But it's just such an important thing.
I think that people also like assume that, you know, people want to take like a magic pill. And people assume that, like, every bad feeling is a disease when it's just, you know, life doesn't have to feel great every day.
I think we make a bigger deal of less today than our parents' generation or my generation.
They weren't able to, though, because it was, like, Holocaust generation. But you mean, like, that generation in general, not necessarily Holocaust?
Yeah, it wasn't just Jews. Mm. I don't think it was just Jews. Certainly...
It would be tougher.
I mean, that's why a lot of Holocaust survivors, a lot of them led very happy lives post the Shoah. Minus the PTSD and minus the...
That their kids got.
Yeah, some of their kids got. And minus some of the trauma that they had to work through. But other minus that, they lived much happier lives than their grandchildren, who didn't go through any of that.
Yeah, and I won't speak for anyone else but myself, but the less things you go through, the more dramatic every little thing becomes.
Yeah. And
there's no fear. There's no fear.
There's no fear. There's a lot of helicopter parenting. I saw it, you know, when I was, you know, parenting my kids. It's very challenging. You want to protect your kids from everything. You don't want them to, you know, you want them to make the basketball team when they really want to get on the team. So you start making a couple of calls. And you want them to do this, so you start doing that. And you pull them aside. And it's bad because if they don't get a couple of bruises, then they're going to...
You have to learn on your own.
You have to learn on your own. You're going to just bruise too easily later on. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a major, major issue. I don't know what caused that exactly, but I can tell you that change was, let's say, my parents' generation and of parenting and my generation of parenting. I saw the big difference. Like, our parents just, I don't know, they let us fail. And it was okay to fail. Not everybody had to get the award. You went to these things and you thought maybe you'd win, maybe you didn't. And one guy walked away with the trophy and everybody else walked out feeling a little crappy.
Yeah.
You did, and you just sucked it up. Felt bad. Nobody tried making you feel
it's
any
like
better.
College, too. It's like
you get in, you don't get in, and my wife is better at this. She was better at this than I was. She was like, it's okay for them to fail. I was like, you know, and I was the protective father. I don't want them to fail. I can prevent this. Okay, you prevent this, but then they're... So I do think that's a real issue. I do think that's a real issue.
And then if they get too productive, we have things like banned books, you know. It's like,
this is going to offend you, and this is, you know. I'm just curious, by the way, as a complete aside. No, I don't want to go there. Let's just finish up Shabbat. We're almost done here. I don't want to get real. We had a few complaints about one of our staff's costumes.
Oh, right.
What was it?
Came dressed as a Native American. And some people were very put off.
What's the problem with that?
I was a Lone Ranger, and Rabbi Yezer was Tonto. Do you even know who Lone Ranger and Tonto? They were like from my dad's generation. They were superheroes. And anyway, I thought he was like the best costume in the place. But by the way, I want to recommend a book about Shabbat, and I should get a commission for this. But Senator Lieberman just passed away. He was someone I had the honor of knowing, and if you want to watch a great podcast, I interviewed him on my podcast. And I interviewed him about his book. He wrote a book about the Sabbath. And he wrote about a lot of interesting things in the Shabbat. He wrote it for a very broad audience, not just Jews, because, you know, Christians observe some form of Sabbath on Sunday and Muslims on Friday. And he feels that that's like one of the great things we gave to the world, this idea of Shabbat. Obviously, they observe it very differently. But he was a fully Torah-observant Jew, a U.S. senator, and has some great stories in there about how he kept Shabbos, even though, you know what I mean? As a senator, he had to vote. Sometimes he had to go. And his the Secret Service, when he was nominated as Al Gore's running mate to be vice president, there was an emergency, and he didn't. Well, he thought it was an emergency. He said, "I have to go vote, but I don't have to drive in the car. I can get there in enough time." So he walked. He walked from where he lived in Washington to Capitol Hill, and was able to vote on Shabbat. He was a great, great example. And he said something very, very beautiful things. One thing I'll just share. I share this last...
I thought voting is always on a Tuesday, though.
I'm sorry?
I thought voting is always on a Tuesday.
No,
in Congress.
No,
On Capitol Hill.
Lawmaker.
Legislator.
So I'll share one thing. I'll share one thing he said. You know, there's a very beautiful custom at the Shabbat dinner for a parent to bless their children. So I'll just share this with you and we'll finish up. But the parents basically place their hands on top of the child's head and they bless their sons to be like Ephraim and Manasseh. Those were Joseph's two sons, the biblical figure Joseph. And their daughters to be like the matriarchs, Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. So it's a little odd, number one, that why don't we bless our sons? They should be like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob if we're blessing our daughters. So one of my other teachers, Rabbi Riskin, suggested, because there was always strife between brothers in the book of Genesis. And the first two brothers that we see got along well were Ephraim and Manasseh. So we kind of want our we want them to get along. Also, is that they were the first Jews born in exile. Everyone else was born in Israel. They were the first Jews born to Joseph when he was running the country in Egypt. And they stayed true to their Judaism, so it's kind of like a blessing that our sons, even though you might be living in a foreign land outside of Israel or outside of your traditions, stay true to your Judaism. Others suggest, though, but Lieberman in the book has this to say, and I just thought it was beautiful.
What's the book called?
It's called The Gift of Rest. It's out. You can get it. Just go on Amazon and just get it. It's really beautifully written. And he goes through the history of the Sabbath, not just in Jewish tradition, but like members of Congress, former presidents, and other statesmen that observed some form of Sabbath. Most of them were Christian. But he said the following. He said, it is a priceless moment of connection, talking about the parents blessing their children, that no matter what happened during the week, the parent feels blessed to have that child and asks God's blessing on that son or daughter. As a parent, you know, weeks can go by when you think of your children less as blessings and more as problems to be solved. Stopping to bless your children once a week makes us pause to appreciate how blessed we are to have them in the first place and reminds them of the love that we feel for them. Just wanted to share that. Beautiful, just thought that beautiful. Was really beautiful. What's that?
No, it's beautiful.
Yeah, the whole book is like that. It's just gorgeous, you know. Any other Shabbat questions?
So, yeah. Is it better to observe Shabbat to a degree and to do like to keep other laws to a degree instead of being able to do it 100%? Or like, is it like once you break Shabbat, like that's it? Or
no? So I mentioned this before. I'm not an all or nothing rabbi. Some Judaism is better than no Judaism.
Right.
I think it's pretty clear from the Torah. Some Shabbat is better than no Shabbat.
Okay.
Now, having said that, that doesn't mean we're supposed to just go ahead and pick and choose and just sort of craft the religion in our own image. That's a little more like serving ourselves and God, if you think about it.
Well, I mean,
but the reality is that when you're starting to observe something, it's unrealistic that you're going to just start observing the whole thing overnight. You'll probably give it up as quickly as you started to adopt it. It has to be gradual. You want to do things in a way that you can assimilate those practices and they can stay with you, like anything in life.
Well, what if they're also, like, for safety reasons? So, like, for instance, I'll go to the Kabbalah Center Friday night and Saturday morning. If it's raining, I'll just come here, it's closer, but usually go to the Kabbalah Center. But I'm coming from 81st and Amsterdam, and I'm walking all the way to 42nd and Lexington Avenue. So
well, there's nothing wrong.
So I'm going to have my keys on me because I can't leave my apartment unlocked that long. I'm going to have my phone on me for emergencies, but on airplane mode. And I'm going to have my pepper spray on me in another pocket. So I'm carrying things on Shabbat.
You're an Arab.
But yeah. You're
so you have an Arab. So, you have an Arab. We'll talk about that another time. Yeah. You can carry. If the outside area has what's called an eruv,
mm-hmm.
which basically transforms an otherwise public domain into a private domain, and you can carry in the private domain. I agree with the pepper spray.
Yeah.
I think
and
that's okay. The phone, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that so much, but again, you want to do things gradually, and we try not to handle the phone at all on Shabbat and try to just like not have it. If there's an emergency and you need it for an emergency, obviously.
Yeah, because also Friday night, like it's going to be dark by the time I'm walking.
Yeah, but you should come here. We like having you here anyway. Okay, go
for it. Yeah, I've got a question. So I think most of us, if not all of us here, are probably mid to late 20s, around that age, maybe early 30s. And so we've only grown up, I'll speak for myself,
yeah.
I've only
yeah.
grown up hearing about Shabbat, even in this class. The best thing about Shabbat is turning your phone off, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of the big thing. What was it 30 when
well,
you
were was
growing
it 30
up,
years ago?
When
yeah,
you were growing up, what did you feel
ages.
Like? Oh, yeah, I mean, now I don't have to watch TV now, or was it something else your parents felt like they really enjoyed missing out on?
I'll tell you a story to answer that question. That's what a good rabbi does. Penelope Leach, L-E-A-C-H, crazy name. was one of England's great child psychologists. And she came to visit a Jewish day school in London. And Rabbi Jonathan Sacks tells the story. He was showing her around the school. And they walked into a kindergarten. And what happens on a Friday when you walk into a kindergarten in a Jewish day school? They're playing Shabbat. So it was like 5-6-year-olds, maybe 4-5-year-olds, you know. And there was a little girl dressed like a mommy and a little boy dressed like the Abba. He was wearing like his father's shirt and long tie hanging down to the floor. It was very cute. And she walks in. So Penelope Leach turns to a little boy and says, what do you think about Shabbat? And he blurts back, on Shabbos, I can't watch TV. Okay? And then she says to him, and what do you like about Shabbat? And the little boy says, Daddy doesn't have to rush off.
Aww.
That's what they told us. Your parents are not running out the door. Nobody has to run anywhere. You can just chill out. I knew I had my parents' undivided attention. I knew when I got together with a friend, it would be a little more quality time because we weren't just watching a ball game together. We actually had to do something. We had to engage each other. Yeah. It was hard. I will tell you at the same time, it was hard not, you know, putting on the boob tube and that's what we used to call it. It was hard not, I remember, like, I was a video game junkie probably for a couple of years when I was in high school. And I used to go to this hotel and they had this video game room. And I used to, like, wait till Shabbos was out, you know, to be able to go back in there and play my stupid video games. But, I mean, that was really, it was hard. It was hard. But I think that it was also good because it developed a little of a sacrifice and, like, pushing off the pleasure a little.
Made you appreciate it more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
Self-discipline of a gist.
The self-discipline is very important. You know about the marshmallow test?
No. How many marshmallows you can fit in your mouth?
No, not that one. Here's the marshmallow test. They give a kid a marshmallow, and they said, if you wait 5 minutes, you can get two. And the kids who waited the extra minute, few minutes to have a second one, whatever, it was a longitudinal, like a long study, you know, like, it was like 15 minutes. They had to, like, basically, a kid had to sit there and stare at the marshmallow for 10 minutes, not eat it. But knowing that that delayed gratification would result in greater gratification. And those kids obviously did much, much better in life. It was sort of a trigger for children that were destined to do better. And that's what you want to really teach your kids. And that's what Judaism does. A lot of this stuff is all, you know, the Torah wants us to live the best life. So all these things that seem overly restrictive, in the end of the day, are just making us better people. You know?
You might not see it immediately.
You don't see it immediately. No, you don't. And that's why Judaism is a tough sell.
Yeah.
Because everything gets sold on TV is like instant gratification. If you buy this, you will get that. If you buy this car, you'll be able to attract this kind of woman. If you, everything is bam, bam, bam. Mm-hmm. But those aren't the valuable things in life. The valuable things in life are the ones that take time and that require restraint. Yeah. All right. I thank you guys for paying attention and for being here and coming out in the rain. Next week, we're getting ready for Pesach, are we not?
We're doing the themes of Passover next week, and then the week after that, we're having a model Seder.
It's a mock Seder, and it's going to get you ready for Pesach, and you're going to sound smart at your Seder, which might be the very first time. What's that?
Are these posted?
Sometimes the content guy makes videos from them.
Yeah.
The what?
Our content guy, Andrew. Oh, he makes reels from them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and we also... I used to put a lot of these on my podcast also. So sometimes
I was going to ask, where can we find your podcast?
Just go on anywhere wherever you get your podcast, yeah. Wildcast.
Also, if you need to get Passover Seder, the first night and the second night. Anyone wants to come, there's the first night is downtown, and the second night is up here.
But try to join us next Wednesday at 7 also, because we're going to start with the themes of Pesach. It's going to start giving you things for the Seder, and then we'll be able to take it to the next level for the Seder the following week.
Thank you.
Pleasure, man.
Such a pleasure.
Shmur matzah is expensive.
But there are, like,
you don't have to use shmur matzah, though.